What is it that the following three people have had in common? Abraham, Wrigley, the makers of Wrigley Gum, the founder, and Glenn Beck. They all believed in tithing. What subject have I carefully avoided addressing in the Miami church for reasons that I will explain later? The subject of tithing. What subject is so mysterious because it features a concept that is alien to natural thinking, which is the concept of addition by subtraction? Again, that's tithing. Some people, including former church members I've run across from time to time, are very bitter against the concept. Many other people, but not all that I've run into that have had a relationship with God, are very passionate for it. I think much bitterness is directed toward the TV evangelists with, in some cases, not all, lavish lifestyles. Some people have felt that way. And others might think, well, tithing doesn't mean that we too could be millionaires. Some would think, well, that's part of a health and wealth gospel, which is very erroneous. Since there are certain questions that arise about the subject, I think it's worth taking the time to discuss the mysterious subject of tithing. What is it that God intends for tithing to accomplish? First of all, I think it's important for us to realize that God will not command us to do something that's impossible for us to do. I think we understand in 1 Corinthians 10, for example, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13, the statement in a unrelated subject, but it's still a valid concept. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, there is no temptation taken you except that which is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that which you're able. With temptation also make a way of escape, that we could be able to bear it. What he's saying in other different words is that God will never ask somebody to face a trial that that person cannot handle. And He will never ask somebody to do something that is impossible to do. In Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28, Matthew 11 and verse 28, the words of Christ state that, Matthew 11 and verse 28, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you," that's responsibility for the things of God, "and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." Verse 30, "My yoke is easy, my burden is light." That's the way it should be for Christians. If it isn't, then maybe there are things that we need to readjust in our lives so that life is not a chore. I understand the conditions out in society, though. It is more of a challenge, say, to make the ends meet than it was even 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And when we think of the economy, I think we understand that we can see inflation right before our eyes in the grocery stores. And so there are many different considerations that we have to account for when we are trying to make the ends meet in our society. Those are challenges. God, though, will not command us to do something that we cannot do. For us, for Him to be able to make sure that we do not face a trial that we can't handle, that means God is watching us constantly. He's monitoring our activities. He knows our every move. I think we forget that. We forget that occasionally we may have angels in our midst. If those angels were manifested, we could see them. We would probably never think that we were alone, that all of our activity is monitored. And God knows our thoughts, and He pays strict attention. He has to, if He's going to reward us according to our works, as it's promised in many occasions. And so if we do things that please Him, He's going to know every single one of them, and He's going to be able to respond. He'll bless us. He may not choose to on other occasions, but that's important for us to consider as I move along through this story. But let's go over, first of all, to Genesis and see that there was an established pattern of tithing, and that's over in Genesis 14. Genesis 14, verses 18 through 20, where we'll see the following. It says, "And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth the bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God." And from a previous sermon that I've given, entitled, "Who and What Was Jesus Christ Before His Human Birth?" Some months ago now I gave that. Melchizedek was, in fact, the one who became Christ, the Logos, and one worthy of allegiance. In verse 19, "And Melchizedek blessed Abraham and said, 'Blessed be Abram, of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth.'" In verse 20, "And he blessed, and blessed be the Most High God, which has delivered you, your enemies, that is, into your hand. And Abraham gave him tithes of all." And even Jacob, his grandson, understood the principle in Genesis 28. And we can go to Genesis 28, verses 18 through 20. "And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had for his pillows, and he set it up for a pillar and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of the city was called Luz at first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, 'If God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I should go and will give me bread and raiment to put on,'" and so forth. It says at the end of verse 22, "I will surely give a tenth unto him." And he was saying that as he was just becoming acquainted with the will and the power of God. There is a very penetrating statement that is mentioned over in Malachi, and sometimes it is misunderstood, but it's worth considering in the intent that God had given it to us in Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3, in verse 8 through 10. It says here, Malachi 3, "Will a man rob God?" And God goes on to tell the ancient Israelites through Malachi, "Yet you've robbed me, but you say, 'Where have we robbed you?' In tithes and offerings." Verse 9, "And he said to them that they would be cursed with a curse, for as he put it, 'You've robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring you forth all the tithes of the storehouse, that there might be enough meat in your house. And prove me now," this is rather bold, "prove me now herewith, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open to you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that there should not be enough room to receive it." It's important to discuss, as I'll do in a few minutes, windows of blessing. What does that mean? What is that driving at? There was a case in the Depression that Mr. Armstrong talked about one time, of a man named Ed Smith, a well driller, not to be confused with the minister by the same name up in Ohio. In 1933, at the depth of the Depression, Ed Smith, a well driller, would go around to the people in the church in Oregon saying, "You've got to pay your tithes. It's so plain. It's in the Bible." And he continued to say that over and over again. And finally, one neighbor was quite irritated. And he says, "Look here, Ed. Why don't you obey the Bible and pay tithes for yourself instead of getting on our case about it?" "Because," came Ed Smith's quick and ready answer, "I don't profess to be a Christian, and you do. And besides, I couldn't afford to tithe anyway." So it so happened that he did, and his wife primarily brought the family to a church service, and Mr. Armstrong spoke on the subject. And then the next week, his wife, all smiles, came up and said, "Here's a dollar bill, and that represents Ed's first tithe." She said triumphantly, "We are down to $10. That's what they had to their name. But she said, "Ed decided to tithe on what we had on hand." Now, does that make sense in the depth of the Great Depression of the 1930s? On paper, it doesn't. To the human mind, it doesn't. If, at any rate, that's what she did. The following week, she came up and said, "Here's a $5 bill." And when he asked, "What's this all about?" She said, the very next day after Ed had given his $1, a customer who owed him $50 for the entire year, and debts seldom got paid in the Depression, my granddad developed an entire real estate through real estate, had a huge development in Toledo, Ohio. He was owed so much money, and he got wiped out. It was rare for people to repay debts. At any rate, this customer owed $50 for at least a year and came by and gave it. That was totally surprised. So Ed's wife said, so now we have given a total of $6 and we have $54 on hand. So inch by inch. But $54 in 1933 was, you could do a lot with that. I think of Hebrews 13, verse 5. Hebrews 13 and verse 5, where it says, let your conduct be without covetousness, and your content, and be content with such things as you have, for God has said, I will never leave you, no, nor forsake you. A triple negative in that statement, which in many different languages denotes a great, great absolute reassurance. I will never leave you, no, not ever. That's the way it reads in the Greek. When you do triple negatives or even double negatives in Spanish, no quiero venir nunca is stronger than no quiero venir. When you're adding additional negatives, for example, it's more strongly stated. One thing about God, He is very passionate about His promises, and it drives Him nuts when people discredit Him. One of the things that really got under his skin was when the Israelites would complain about the fact that they thought they'd die in Egypt, in the wilderness. And they said, and what's going to happen to us? And our little ones, they would say. And finally he said, I will sustain you, and it's your little ones that are going to be the ones that get into the promised land of Canaan. It's one thing to tithe out of abundance. It's another thing to tithe out of austerity. Either God is true and what He says is true, or it's not. It says in Hebrews 6:18, it is impossible for God to lie. It's also repeated in Titus 1 and verse 2. It is impossible for God to lie. He doesn't work against Himself. I have a brother that lives in Colorado. He's known about, quote, his brother's religion for some time. He chose a different course of life. He was in the world of skiing, he was the freestyle champion of North America, and ended up using that to become to have his own television show on ESPN, the Freestyle Mogul Tour, for several years. And then when he was moved out of that, with a sizable amount of money, he sank it into the dot-com industry and was totally wiped out in 2000-2001. That had led to him losing his house, and then he went through a very, very agonizing divorce, and then he lost his advertising business. And while we kept in communication, I found out that he was living out of his car. My sister and I, different times, would send him money. But that was disconcerting to find out that you've got a family member living in, of all places, Colorado, where you get 15 feet of snow, eking out an existence in one's car, unemployed, no money, not much. That was disconcerting, obviously. So finally, after sending some money and all, we were talking, I said, you know what? It appears that to me, I don't think I'm going out on a limb, but it appears to me that God is not blessing you. It doesn't take a rocket science to say that. And I said, you know what? We can treat the result, but maybe the cause needs to be course corrected. Maybe you need to have a more of a relationship with God. Now, I want to scream it out and say, you need to do this. But I had to do it from His point of view, so I didn't sound sound like some obnoxious, insensitive person. And so it was that I said, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you determine for the first time in your life whether God exists or not? We've talked about God and the Bible, and he had even read some literature. But I said, now's the time to prove it. Because if he doesn't exist, then you don't have to feel guilty about wasting your time with religion. But if he does exist, and if he promises to help those that tithe, then you'll be able to get out of this horrible situation. And it's something has to happen. People just can't be just indiscriminately sending money and there be no change in circumstances. Yeah, because he couldn't find work on top of that. So it was that he decided to do that. He had just a fraction of money and gulp, he did it. I didn't care where the money was sent, and I told him, you don't have to send it to where I'm affiliated. Just prove God exists. Find out. Because if he doesn't, you don't have to take the time to pray. You don't have to worry about that, because that would be a waste if God doesn't exist. But if he does, then maybe he can incorporate you into his purpose, his will, his plan, and bless you. And we read these verses like in Malachi 3. You either want to be blessed or cursed. You got to choose. We all have to. So it was, and this was about 2 or 3 years ago, and so it was that after he tithed, somebody in the community found out about him and said, why don't you spend the winter living with us? So now he got moved out of his car and he got a place that was warm, a roof over his head. And then he continued to work. He was trying to launch a magazine. And then some people paid him that owed him money, and some other people paid him in advance. He says, this never happens. And this was a project in Mexico. He says, this never happens. And yet it did happen. So he tithed on that. Wasn't too much longer that he was able to rent a house with another person, and he was able to sustain himself with that. And then the following year, he got a steady job demanding and developing advanced computer skill, and combining that with the advertising ability that he had. And so he was able to get established, get on his feet, be able to live a life of normalcy. And that's where the story is at this point. So it made a difference for him. And different times he would say, I'm amazed at what's happened here. And one time he had to have a couple yard sales. He said, and nothing happened. I needed some help. And in the final hour, all these people just poured in. And it became a bidding war with one or two situations. And God saw him through. Did God make him a millionaire? No. But he helped him out. And he's helped so many people out. I can remember there's one guy that we have up in the Tampa area. And he talks about many times how he would tithe. And he said, it just didn't work. It didn't work on paper. I can't explain it. That's why I call it a mystery. Addition by subtraction. That if we give God a tenth, a tithe, and we're left with 90%, that we can do more with God's blessing with a 90% than we can with 100% without God's help. Now, I realize, and you probably are quick to realize too, wait a minute. We've got taxation. We've got hidden taxes, cigarette tax, gasoline. Well, you don't have to worry about that, cigarette tax, but gasoline tax, inheritance tax, hidden taxes, excise tax. I won't enumerate all of them, but quite a few. And so our discretionary disposable income, after all these other obligations, may not be all that much. But you and I have the opportunity to have God as a partner to help us out. And if we happen to have great business acumen, great ability to time things, and to have vision and so forth, like some of the great entrepreneurs of the time that also tithe then it's not a surprise that some people became phenomenally successful monetarily. But the blessings in the window of heaven does not have to mean only in physical means. There are spiritual blessings and the peace of mind that if we do what God wants, as he says, the righteous will never beg for bread. I've seen people beg for bread in this country, in countries abroad. And I've sometimes felt compassionate to help people out, but I always think of King David's statement, the righteous will never beg for bread. It would be an insult to God because he says that he is going to bless and be a partner to people that put him first. And for him to leave people hanging, that's not the way of God. So why is it difficult then, maybe? Because sometimes maybe we're not doing other things that we need to do. I remember a person that in one of the other churches, he's died many years ago, that he had his own business, but he probably should have never been in business. And he had me, I finally ended up offering to help him. And he ran two flower shops. And it took me to go through all the books to show him something that he didn't realize, that he was losing money. He wasn't making any money. He was losing money. But one thing that was apparently lacking was a disinterest in tithing. And when I asked him that, he said, well, you know, we will donate flowers. You know, figure that's an offering. Well, that's good enough. That'll take care of it. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man. It doesn't always work with human reasoning. It was apparent to me that there was always a lack, there. Something was missing. God's blessing was missing. Now, that may not be true for everybody that may find it a challenge. Maybe God tests. I can't paint everybody with the same brush. John Rockefeller was the wealthiest man in the world in 1911. He was the first billionaire. He's made the statement because he tithed. He believed in it. He said, quote, I would have never been able to tithe on my first $1 million if I had not tithed on my very first salary of $1.50 per week. And that's what he made. He was not wealthy. Because of his business sense and very aggressive business activity, to say the least, I would fully have expected him to be successful, well, and wealthy. I don't know about being a billionaire back at that time, but I would have expected him to be significantly wealthy because of all of his other abilities. But you add the willingness to tithe in addition to that, and that's why he got to where he was, at least monetarily. So if I quote John Rockefeller or Bill Gates or other people that have given 10% or more, that's not to suggest you too can be a millionaire if you do that. That's a health and wealth concept, which can be erroneous. But it does mean what we see over in Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. And to me, this is reassuring. Because if I didn't know about the truth and about Bible prophecy and about the power of God, I would be scared out of my mind going and living in this economy. Because it's very bad, the future. It looks very, very bleak out there. God may sustain it for a while, but we have covered in sermons on Bible prophecy in the recent past how things could be drastically different. And it won't matter how much our net worth could be. What we need is to have a connection with God. And as I say this, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be planning for the future, our youth, and trying to make the most of our economic opportunities now. But in Proverbs chapter 3, in verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he'll direct your paths. Verse 9, honor your Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all your increase, so that your barns will be filled with plenty and the presses burst out with new wine. Now, this is an analogy that's rooted with agriculture. This is the kind of society that the audience back when this was written had. However, the equivalent of that is that if we put God first, He will make sure that we have enough and more than enough. And to have that kind of reassurance in the future is a wonderful, wonderful blessing. It's an absolute necessity to have that. And also in this, it says verse 21, same chapter, talking about when we keep God's ways and they not depart from our eyes, in verse 21, and we keep sound wisdom and discretion, verse 23, then shall you walk in your way safely, and your foot shall not stumble, and when you lie down, you shall not be afraid. Yes, and when you lie down, your sleep shall be sweet. For so many in society, sleep is non-existent. I don't know where the next paycheck's coming from. They may downsize my company. They may get rid of me. I'm getting old. If I get old enough, they may take away my benefits and get somebody that's younger. Don't know what's going to happen. The taxes may go up, and we could lose this or that. Oh, yeah. This is what's on the minds of so many people. And to be able to have peace of mind, and to be able to go, as I'll say this several times, in from the throne of grace and say, God, You are my partner. You promised to help me. You promised, and You cannot lie. If You're going to ask me to do this, then You have to do that. And I expect that, not because I'm anything, but You promised. It was Your idea before I was even born. You say You don't lie. You say You'll come through for me. You say that it can happen. Then I need that. And I can claim that. I can ask for that. It's my divine right, not because I earned it, it's because You gave it to me. And You have to help me. You have to. I am glad that that option exists. When the church says we want you to live here or there or whatever, and you don't know what the future is going to be, and you can take one day at a time, and it's just important to know that. It's important to know that. I get some emails that are quite scary on a regular basis from different investors, and the reason I've allowed myself to subscribe is to just find out what the climate is like. It's helpful because that's where the real news is. It's not on the front page of the typical newspapers, I find. But the real news is what's in the Wall Street Journal and Investor Daily and other publications. And all that talk about the real news that's driving this country and has a major, talks about things that will have a major impact on our life, the work, the activity of the church. If the economy crashes, we could have a massive stock market meltdown any day now. That's what they're indicating. And the ripple effect from Europe, the euro is ready to crash. Germany is the only country that can really bail out Greece and Italy and Spain and Portugal, and they have worked hard to get to where they are. France says we've suddenly realized we've got problems of our own. And if Germans decide, hey, we've bailed them out too long, we're going to have to rechange everything, then the euro could collapse, and with all the debts that are the credit that is extended, that will affect the number of U.S. banks, and we could have another round of depression or recession, double-dip recession is the operative word right now. I don't want to have to worry. It's natural to worry. I can think of the implication on the church. Church income could go down, but you know what? The buying power of the income could go four or five times further. We might have people suddenly pour in here that are so scared and think, everything's failing. Does God really exist? Because I need some help. I remember a ripple of that back in the early 1980s in Florida. We had a flood of people, church members, coming from up north because they were thinking, the steel industry is gone. The auto industry is under erosion. And maybe it's better in the Sun Belt. People were flocking from Pittsburgh, say, to Houston and coming down to Florida places in order to land on their feet again. Well, what's around the corner is much, much more challenging. It's important to be in harmony with God and to be able to ask God for His help. But John Rockefeller, was getting back to that occasion, he had several sons, and one of his sons, Nelson, said, even though he was so wealthy, he says, we got 25 cents a week from him, and he made us earn the rest. We were required to give 10% to charity, save 10%, and show a monthly account sheet as to where the rest of the money went. And Nelson became the governor of New York State for many years and vice president of the United States. His brother Winthrop was the governor of West Virginia, and brother David became the chairman of Chase Manhattan Bank. All multimillionaires. Other famous people who have tithed, Michael Dell, who's formed Dell Computers. But he was enterprising. He made his first $1,000 at age 12, selling stamps. He's worth over $100 million. Benjamin Kraft of Kraft Food. He said, quote, the only investment I ever made which has paid constant dividends. This is a man who is a financial expert and had invested money many times over. He says, the only investment I ever made that has paid constant dividends is the money I have given to the Lord. Other people that tithed include Hershey of Hershey Candy Bars, F.W. Woolworth. I mentioned Wrigley Spearmint Gum and all of that. Wrigley Field in Chicago, named after him. There's the Wrigley Mansion in Pasadena, not far from where Ambassador College was. Just the land is worth a fortune today. Heinz Ketchup, Heinz 57, Pittsburgh, he tithed. He believed in tithing. William Colgate, Palmolive, Colgate Toothpaste, he was a tither. People that tithe, they're exceeded, and the tithing would include also Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Conrad Hilton of Hilton Hotels, Ted Turner. Is it an accident that these people were incredibly successful? They would have been successful, I think, anyway. But the fact that on top of their own abilities, they did instruct their accountants to set aside at least 10% for charity or church or some humanitarian effort. Being diligent in business is important to succeed. Timing, vision, hard work, education, business sense. But I have to, again, suggest that God favored these people over their competitors. So it doesn't necessarily mean that tithing leads to millions of dollars, but tithing does lead to the windows of heaven where we don't have to worry. If we're working hard and doing our part, now I suppose if I tithed, but I never got out of bed really until half the working world is eating lunch and thought that I could manage a business, that I was going to get very far. We have to do our part. When Glenn Beck was considering tithing, he said, when I heard about the subject of tithing, I says, that's crazy. And then he said, Tanya and I decided, though, my wife Tanya, and I decided to study into it. Let's give 10%, he concluded, and see how it works. He said, quote, that first tithe check that I wrote was the hardest check I ever wrote in my life. Just to show that the principle can work even when billions of dollars are not at stake. And there was a book that came out once called Tortured for Christ. It addressed a practice of a number of prisoners in the Soviet prison. They had nothing except they were given one piece of bread every week and soup, dirty soup every day. That's what they were to live on. It was cruel. They didn't have a whole lot, and they decided, a number of them together, they decided that they were going to start tithing. And so they would tithe a piece of bread, and they would tithe the soup, and they would look for the weakest prisoners in their compound and give that to them. That helped the weak ones, and they themselves had sustained strength, and they were able to withstand the trial. the windows of heaven may not guarantee wealth, but it does guarantee a sufficiency. We had a church member once in Norway who lived where there was exorbitant taxation. When he put tithing first, he didn't have much of anything left over. But he made this observation after a couple of years. He said, you know, my shoes never wore out. And my chief mode of transportation, which was, he lived on an island, his boat, outboard motor, he said, I never had to repair it. It just ran and ran. It ran long after other motors of its kind would die out. It just continued indefinitely. And so everything that he had had an extraordinary durability. Now, as I am talking about this, it might come up, well, the reason that this guy is up here talking about tithing, he's trying to get people to send him money. No. One of the things that I like about the way the church is organized, I don't see the money. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to get close to it. It's not mine. It's like blood money. It's the way I feel about the Holy Day offerings. I'm always glad when somebody else can mail it in. If you are not sure about tithing, I don't ask you to tithe to this church. I ask you, in the privacy of your own mind, to decide, I need to tithe somewhere. To some charity, some organization. The main thing is, can we prove that God exists? There are other proofs that God exists. We've even had literature. God is a creator. He is a designer. He is a sustainer. And those are proofs of God's existence. Matter had a beginning, but God did not. That's a personal way, in addition to what I've mentioned, or in addition to answered prophecy. Godly intervention is a proof of His existence. It's a proof that He's aware of your every thought and every activity, and that He was willing to extend His blessing when you take Him up on His word. So again, I'm not trying to induce anybody to give what they don't want to give or to give to a specific purpose. I would think that in time you would ask yourself, what is the most advantage? What organization would use that money the best? But I hope I make it very clear that I'm not after anyone's money. Life goes on whether any of us exist or not. But Christ even mentioned the fact that tithing was to had its place in Matthew 23 when He was talking to the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Even though this is the context was different, He was correcting those groups of people for their hypocrisy. In passing, He said in verse 23 of Matthew 23, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay the tithe of the mint and the anise and the cumin," and He didn't say that that was wrong, "but you've omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, faith. These ought you to have done, and what? Not do the others?" No, He says, "and not to leave the others undone." And then He goes on with other thoughts with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. But He's mentioning that in passing that tithing did exist. It was extant there that day. And I'm sure that if Christ did not tithe, that all these people, these critics that were monitoring His every move, looking for a way to find fault with Him, would have screamed and protested against Him. In Ezekiel 22 and verse 26, Israel was prophesied to go into captivity. That's ancient Israel. And we know that all prophecy frequently repeats itself. And so we see a modern day application of that. But in Ezekiel 22 and verse 26, God is listing all the different problems that were extant back in the time that Ezekiel was writing. And He says, "And her priests of Israel have violated my law, and they've profaned my holy things, and they have put no difference between the holy and the profane. Neither have they shown any difference between the unclean and the clean. And they've hid their eyes from my Sabbaths." So there are multiple problems that were manifested at this particular time. But the statement that I want to focus in here, they have put no difference between the holy and the profane. or that which in other translations if render it, they have not made a distinction between that which was common and that which was holy. And what is common would be what man could use for himself, and what would be holy would be that which was to be earmarked for God. Again, if we go back to Malachi 3, I want to again read certain phrases in here. Malachi chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. They're talking about robbing of God. In verse 9, it says, "You are cursed with a curse, for you've robbed me, even this whole nation." You have to ask yourself, the United States of America, is it a country that right now is blessed, or is it maybe cursed? It talks in Proverbs and talks in Deuteronomy and Leviticus. The intent that God had for this country, you shall lend and you shall not borrow. Now, we've recognized that prudent borrowing for maybe a home or for an education, a house, a car, may be logical. But as a standard, God intended that debt be not such an encumbersome thing. That even in ancient Israel, that there would be a year of release every 50 years, a Jubilee year. All the debts would be erased. But in the United States, our country has borrowed so much money. It's breathtaking. We may borrow as much as we take in this particular year, equaling the GNP. And it can't go on like that. And we may see a drastic disappearance of government services in the future in spite of increased taxation. What we see in the streets of Greece could easily happen here a few weeks or a few months later. The protest on Wall Street would be mere pablum compared to what would happen in the future. That does not describe a nation that is being blessed. It has been in the past, but the Western world, including U.S. and Britain, Britain, America, and other English-speaking places, find themselves under a curse rather than blessing. Curses can come upon those that will withhold from God, but blessings equally can be extended to God. Mr. Armstrong, in the Depression years, you would think, well, he was being called by God to do a great work, and yes, he was. Well, surely he didn't have to worry about anything. He had the windows of blessings on himself, right? No. You could argue that Mr. Armstrong was under a curse because there were years in the Depression that he did not understand tithing. He makes a description about one time when there was no food in the house and he found a box of dry macaroni and he decided that that's what he would provide for the family. That's all there was. And so he boiled it. And no sauce, no salt, nothing else was in the house. And he said, "I offer this, quote, delicacy, unquote, to my wife and my kids." And they couldn't shove it down. It was just like eating cardboard. It's tough. That's what was in the house. Later on, he writes in his autobiography that when he learned about tithing and did that, he says they never went without food ever again. Before then, he did. But you could say, well, God was working with him. He was going to do this great work, and he was going out on faith and developing a broadcast and trying to get a magazine going. And he was willing to visit people and help and teach the Bible. Didn't matter. He didn't have the whole package. God is not a respecter of persons. And so he went hungry on occasion. It was an innocent mistake. And as he would look on it today. But God is not a respecter of persons. There was a woman that one time had been tithing. It was with her husband. This is an unusual story, but she allowed it to be revealed so the whole world would know. And she decided that she would see what it would be like not to tithe after they had been tithing for a number of years. Both she had a job, he had a job. Now, she wrote, "I am not sure what entered into my mind when I decided to prove God and not to tithe. But I decided to go without tithing for 3 months. The first month went okay. The second month, my toddler ended up drinking out of the toilet after we put blue disinfectant into it. He lost his appetite and then became deathly sick. Now, we had to rush him to the hospital. While that was going on, our appliances broke one after another. And then suddenly there was something wrong with several of our cars. Our health took a dive. My husband got diverticulitis, a pinched nerve that needed surgery, back pain. And we both went to, not that everybody with back pain or whatever is not obeying God, but all of this together happened here. A pinched nerve, and then even their pet was in trouble. Instead of the malls, the pharmacy became our shopping place. And then my husband said, "What is going on? I feel like we're under a curse." And she said, "We are." And he said, "Well, how do you know?" "I just knew it. The situation became so unbearable that I told God that I would change. I believed Malachi 3 beyond any shadow of doubt." Now, I think it's valuable to include an example like this, but I'm not a fan of fear religion. I'd rather spend the rest of the time talking about the positive examples of what works well when we obey God. But continuing this thought, she said, when she told him this and resolved to make a course correction in her life, she said, then there was peace all around, as if it was the day after a typhoon. Our pet started eating again. Our toddler recovered. My husband received a miracle. New x-rays showed that he was fine. There was no need to operate on his shoulder for a pinched nerve. We seldom see doctors now. Things can change. Things can change quickly. But it's a test. There was a man by a deacon. He became a deacon in the church, Mike Helms, in Oregon. And in the 1930s, again, very difficult time. He was a farmer, and he was trying to put God first, and so he tithed. And it looked like he got kicked in the shins because of it. You know, can't win for losing, man. He tithes, and what happened? There was a terrible flood, and it wiped out all the farms in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. Except he had some land that wasn't flooded. And Mr. Armstrong had him in his congregation. He patted him on the back. He says, "Mike, I'm so sorry. Is there anything we can do for you to help compensate?" Well, that's what people do for each other. He said, "I don't know, but Romans 8:28, all things will work for the good." He says, "I cannot tell you how it's going to work for the good in this mess, but I am sure God will take care of me." And frankly, have any of us known of a time where somebody's put God first and then they just died, that it didn't pay off in a situation like this? So Mike Helm says, "I don't know how, but I know God will work it out." And God did work it out. He was able, he realized, to replant on the high ground and salvage some of the land that he had. But almost everybody else had been flooded out. He did get a harvest, a crop. It wasn't as big as it would normally be. But before we say, "Oh, that's too bad," we've got to realize that nobody else had anything to sell in that valley. He had a monopoly. And so what he sold, he could sell for 3 and 4 times the price. That's what the public demanded and was willing to pay. So he ended up making more money. He came out further ahead than he would if it were a normal, good, growing, harvesting year. And so that is one of the ways that God can work a miracle. As I call it, and we'll continue to mention, miracle, addition by subtraction. Addition by subtraction. What do we do with the tithe money that comes to God's church? In Matthew 24, Matthew 24 and verse 14, perhaps you know this one by memory. It says, And the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached unto all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end shall come. It is a means by which we can afford to go on super TV stations and multimedia efforts to reach a huge population of people. It generates at least a phone call a week here in the South Florida area. I got another call on just before coming to church today. People want to know more information. They're starting to think. They're starting to wonder what's going on. But in order for them to contact us, they have to know we exist. In Matthew 28, and verse 19 and 20, you're probably familiar with this, so I'll just read it. Go you therefore and preach all nations, baptizing them into the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things, whatever I've commanded you. And lo, I'm with you to the end of the world. And we do this without asking the public for money. That's in Matthew 10, verse 8. Freely shall you receive, freely give. That's a principle that we've operated under. In 1975, there was a time when the our former association tried to encourage people to pay for their own subscription, and the circulation nosedived. And then when they tried to do that 20 years later, the same thing happened. But tithing will help produce a salaried ministry. And we've had many others that volunteer, and that's was been my life for most all of my life. Numbers 18, verses 20 and 21, don't turn there, but that's a Bible verse that indicates the fact that tithing always historically financed the Levitical priesthood. And by extrapolation, we've paid at least part of the ministry as we've been able in the last 50 years under the same principle indeed. Now, I've got to hurry along here. In Matthew 18, Matthew 18 and verse 15. Important scripture, Matthew 18 and verse 15. Here it talks about, if your brother shall trespass against you, go tell him his fault between him and you alone. And if he hears you, fine, you've gained your brother. If he doesn't hear you, take one or two other people and then have a meeting. Try to work it out. And if that doesn't work, then you take it to the church, or at least to the representative of the church. And then that my person may make a decree on that. And we've sometimes done that with divorce and remarriage situations. Verse 18, verily I say to you, whatever you bound on earth shall be bound in heaven. And this is addressing basically church administration. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. That is true only if it's based on godly principle. What I'm leading to is this. We would use a verse like this to justify the fact that the church in recent time has realized, you know what, we're not a theocracy the way we were in ancient Israel. In the theocracy, when you had church and state combined, under Moses, there were three tithes, actually. A tithe that went to the Levitical priesthood, a second tithe that people would save to attend the holy festivals of God, and the third tithe would go for the widows, the poor, the needy, and so on. The church has realized, and I think we all do, is that we have huge taxation. It's redundant for the church to have a third tithe if we all pay money to provide welfare and people have that option that need it, or food stamps or whatever it is. It is intended for those that need it. And that is a godly principle. And so while it's people can if they wish, the church does not expect people of average means to be giving third tithe. And if they have small amounts of money, then that would be completely ridiculous. And it's the church has realized that because of taxation, that will not exist in a theocracy under God, that if there is taxation, that the church has said that people could tithe on their net instead of their gross. That's more fair because, again, taxation is a burden. And we're to render to Caesar that which is Caesar, and to God that which is God's. Now, regarding second tithe, back in 1973, the church felt we need to have a system by which those that are diligent to save tithes, if they don't have enough, if at all possible, the church will try to provide them a way to get to the Feast of Tabernacles or to have a transportation to the other holy days. And so a tithe of the second tithe was established. At, for hall rental, for the festival meetings, and then to take care of those that might need some help. And additionally, now in the last year, we've provided more local sites. So Tampa was one, Montana had one, and there may be some others added. It's enabled those of limited health or funds, even with church help, they might prefer to be at some local area. But the church is sensitive to the fact that we don't live in, we live in a society anyway that is heavily taxed, and that we have to make some allowance for that. But having done that and using the principle that God would bind that on earth in Matthew 18, verse 18, that we still must operate in this difficult situation of living in man's society under man's governments, implement the principles of God, and ask God to bless that. So we encourage people, obviously, to tithe and first tithe, and then also to save a festival tithe for themselves that they can utilize. Now, as far as tithing, I'm glad that others before me have, because I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here today because the principle of others, of giving, enabled me to read literature and to find out information that I otherwise would not have known about. And our efforts enable others after us to learn of this way of life. I think of the statement that one philosopher wrote, sharing is the doorway through which the soul escapes the prison of self-preoccupation. It is one of the clearest paths to God. I will need to conclude this. One man one time years ago, back again when money stretched a lot further, he was tithing on $40 a week. He made $40 a week. That covered all of his expenses, his home, house payment, and everything. And life worked well with him. And then he told his minister once, "Wow, my income has gradually increased to $500 a week." And he said, "I'm not. That means I'd be tithing $50. I don't know if I could do that. That's more than what I ever had." And the pastor says, "Well, no problem. We'll just pray that God reduces your income to $40 a week, and then it'll be really easy." Well, that's not logical. What is encouraging, though, is that we can come to God and ask Him to help us in our health, in our lives, in our activities, in our finances, in the whole spectrum of activity, and that would include our financial situations. Now, if we've been inadequate or made mistakes in the past, sometimes it's best to look at the past as a bucket of ashes. And the proactive thing is, well, where do I go from here? Where do I go from here? And where do we go? We should go to God and say, "God, You are our sustainer. You love us. You bless us. And You are interested in our welfare, even our physical welfare. And You say that You'll take care of us if we put You first. So I'm trying, imperfect as I am, to put You first. And I expect You to respond to that. Not because of who I am, but because of who You are. You do not lie. You've promised. You've promised. You have to make good Your promises." And so He will. He certainly will. And we will expect the blessings of and interventions of God so that we will have what we need. It's very, very important. It can be a test, but it's a test that people have successfully done year after year. And If I thought I could live the future without tithing and thought that I could get ahead, even if God just left me alone, the circumstances of society will not leave me alone. It's going to be unsustainable sooner or later for anybody, or almost anyone. Knowing what we know about the book of Revelation, I so much would rather be in harmony with God as best as I can and have His help, because that means more to me than hoping that I'll have good luck or happenstance will fall in my direction. I'd rather have the assurance of God and come before Him and come boldly and say, God, You've promised, please help. Please help not just me, but all the other people that are looking to You, that depend on You. I marvel as Matthew 6 talks about the birds, the sparrows. They don't fret. They don't worry about what's going to happen to them. And, that's not on their minds. They can't think about the future. They're satisfied gathering their worms and picking up debris to make birds' nests. And they're seem to be content in harmony with nature. They're not developing ulcers and fret and worry. And God says we can be the same way. Take no anxious thought and seek you first the kingdom of God. And God will add these things to us. Now, I've been reluctant to talk on this subject in the past because, especially through the challenges of the last year, I wanted it to be on record, if anybody were to ask, as to being one that was not preoccupied with money. Even in the Holy Day offertory messages that I've given, I've been very low-keyed on purpose because I've considered that this group has been quite generous. Not perfect, and I don't know of any perfect people anywhere. I don't know everybody's private lives or whatever. But when it comes to giving, I always felt that people are kind and give what they can. And I don't know if you can improve on that. I've been very reluctant to say that. I never wanted anybody to think that I was in this for the money or that I expected us to be or anything like that. These are godly principles. This is God's institution, tithing, and God either makes it work or He doesn't exist. But through the challenges of the last year or so, people might misconstrue any statement on money. And so I decided I'm not going to address that, even though it's a needed subject. I'm not going to talk about that because I didn't want to create a wrong or false impression. It's not about money. It's about us being in harmony with God. That's just an addendum to it, and it's one that God says He will bless when we put Him first. So this is a wonderful subject. Addition by subtraction, God can make a difference for us. Let's appreciate the fact that He's not a liar, and if we're not sure, let's prove Him. Let's put Him to the test. If it didn't work, call me up and say, hey, you were wrong. I did this for 2 months, and I'm worse off now than I ever was. Then I'll leave with you. But no, I don't think that's going to happen. I've never met anybody yet that says, I put God first and I really, really suffered for it. I really missed out. You know, it was awful. It never has happened yet. God is not a liar. Let's be thankful for that. It'll mean more as time goes on than it ever did in the past.